I started in 19...
Wouldn't you be more comfortable here?
No.
Okay.
And I think I said... And the first year I was playing in the Mississippi Valley League with Ottumwa, Iowa, and I hit 397, and I had hit, until the last week, I was hitting over 400.
Is that right?
And they sold me for $3,000, which was a lot of money in those days. And so I got to thinking, when I ever get released, I will ask when I sign up to get my release at the end of each season and see if I can get there for a better salary that way.
Okay.
And that's why...
That was before agents.
Yeah, that's why I did what I did. I played in quite a few teams. I went to Hollywood, and when I got to Hollywood, Bill Dickey's brother...
Skeets Dickey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was sent down from the Yankees or wherever he was, and he replaced me.
Oh, is that
I
right?
I was automatically out, even though they paid $3,000 to get me. When Dickey's name arrived on the scene,
he
got the job.
He was box office.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
And so from then on, I got to be kind of independent in regard to signing, but I...
So you're almost a freelancer in a way.
Almost, yeah. But if it was a nice town and if I had a good year, I would usually sign up again right away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now that was not the conventional way to do things.
No, it wasn't. No. But I had run across a few Sharpies that were on the way down.
Yeah.
And they told me how to operate.
Okay. Well, now you were born in St. Louis.
Yes.
Okay. Now, did you grow up there too?
I stayed in St. Louis until I was 12 years old, and then my father was transferred. He was a manufacturer of shoe last.
Okay, you know, that's is that the top
that part?
Yeah.
Shoe was built around.
Okay.
And he was transferred to Milwaukee, and of course I had to go along, and I was 12 years old. So I started to go to school here. After leaving St. Louis.
Okay, where did you go to school here?
Oh,
in Milwaukee.
Yeah. I started off at the 37th Street School. That's about 37th Street near Walnut.
Okay.
And then after I graduated, that's grammar school. And after I graduated from grammar school, I went to Washington High School.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. It was a real nice school.
Right? Yeah.
I'm not so sure how
long
it is
time
now.
Ago, yeah.
It was brand new, beautiful school.
It's still a not a bad looking school.
Oh, it's
now,
a good looking school.
Yeah.
It was always a beautiful building.
Yeah.
And boy, everything in that school was dramatic. Yeah.
Now with the South Division.
Then when I got to be, my folks didn't have much money, and I was told early in life, my mother died when I was 3 years old, and I was told by my stepmother early in life that as I got old enough, 16, I was going to have to go to work and help support the family.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So I quit Washington High School when I had 2 years in.
That wasn't unusual then, was it?
No.
Yeah.
That was, and I went to the Boys Technical High School, where I learned the electrical trade. So that I could work as an electrician.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that was that what you were going to be? You were going to be an electrician?
I thought that would be. Electricity was modern.
Yeah.
And I thought that would be the coming thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I never amounted to hill of being as an electrician. Because my idea of an electrician was to do electrical things, not to. You know, I was a house wire. I was there with a brace and bit,
drilling
holes through 2x4s to run the cables through. I thought, this is not electrical work.
Yeah, I could have done that.
Yeah, anybody can drill a hole. And then that's all it amounted to. You see, every one of these outlets has a flexible cable coming through. And every one of those cables is running along through a lot of 2x4s
yeah.
and 2x6s.
That's what you were in charge of.
Yeah, I was in charge. Right.
Drilling holes.
Yeah.
Now, when did you start playing ball?
1927.
How about when you were a kid, though? You probably played
ball. Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yes, I was playing ball as soon as I could run and throw.
Is that right?
That, yeah, and I loved the bat. And I was a little bit arrogant, I think. I'm pretty sure I was, because I always, when it was kind of time to have batting practice, mm-hmm. I was the first one in line.
Well, Ray said you were one of the best hitters he's ever seen.
Yeah, I was pretty good.
Yeah.
I led a lot of leagues in the minor leagues.
Yeah, I know you, yeah.
But I never really got a fair shot in the major leagues, because it was, when I would get there in spring training, mm-hmm. I was fine. But just as soon as the season would start, these double-A players would be coming up to the major league.
Yeah.
And yours truly was going back to some other team.
That was had to be disappointing.
Oh, it was.
Yeah. Because that's why you play.
Yeah. And did I ever tell you how I got to be a catcher?
No.
Okay. I started out as all kids play the outfield,
yeah.
And then they said, well, you got a good arm, you can play on third base. So I played third base for about 5 years in the minor leagues,
mm-hmm.
until we got to Chattanooga and we won the Southern League pennant at Chattanooga. After the season and the following season, we were playing, our first string catcher got hurt. He hurt his hands and mm-hmm. they had to take him out, and they put in the utility catcher, the second string
yeah.
catcher. And I always liked to warm up the pitcher just to have something mm-hmm. to do before the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always warming up the pitchers, and the second string catcher got hurt about the third day he was in there, and the manager looked at me plump. He says, "You're in there." So, Klump was in there all right. I never caught behind the bat.
Oh, was that right?
Never did. Only
wow.
just warm up, you know.
Yeah.
And Luke Sewell is the one there who taught me how to catch.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, he's
said,
a good one.
Oh, and
yeah.
He said, "Albert, you got to gather everything." And I see today with these one-hand mitts.
Yeah.
The catch, low balls you're supposed to catch this way.
Yeah, in a bug. Yeah.
And gather everything. He said, "Elmer, that's what makes a good catcher. And also you'll get along real well with the pitchers if you throw everyone back to the pitcher right here."
Oh, it's no kidding.
You probably never noticed
no.
that.
No, uh-uh.
Yeah, he said the pitcher will love it.
Yeah.
Because I said, "Yes, I've seen it. We're diving around
yeah.
on the mound." In those days, you were supposed to conserve your energy, you know, the pitcher was.
Yeah.
And everybody else. Today, the batter walks halfway back to the bench after every pitch.
That's right, yeah.
The pitcher walks completely around the mound and decides eventually to look for the sign and then throw. And he said, in those days when we were starting, the pitcher made as little effort as possible after every pitch. So the pitcher would stand on the mound
mm-hmm.
and throw, and they finished up like this, not like
feel.
This, so
yeah.
they could hit in the butt.
Yeah, or falling down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said, "Throw everyone here," and the pitcher just loved it, because otherwise they're doing this.
Sure.
And they're doing that, and It takes a little energy.
Now that's interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, in those days, we expected a pitcher to finish
nine
the game.
Nine innings,
too.
Yes. Now, he goes in there for one hit once in a while.
That's right, yeah. It's a totally different game.
Yes,
isn't
it is.
Do you still watch baseball? Or?
I get disgusted.
So does Ray.
Yeah, I get real disgusted when I see it. I don't know how stupid. I know we would stay in the box, and if we didn't, we got told by the umpire, and he meant it. You stay in the box after every pitch.
Yeah.
You didn't walk halfway back to the bench, throw the rosin bag on
right.
the ground.
Well, that's why games last 3.5 hours.
Yes, better. We used to play in the Southern League. We had the record a couple of times of playing a 9-inning game in 1 hour and 20 minutes.
Is that right?
Yeah. Because they'd all stand here, and then you're ready to pitch on the next one, and the hitter's ready to hit.
Yeah.
And if he has a good day and gets a lot, don't strike out too many, but gets a lot of ground balls
sure.
and fly balls, that goes fast.
Yeah. Those days are over.
Yeah.
Well, now, did you have brothers and sisters, too?
No.
Okay. Now, what did your parents think when you decided to play pro baseball?
They were both dead.
Oh, they were then. So
yeah,
you were really on your own.
My mother died when I was 3, and my father died when I was about... Oh, he never saw me play pro ball.
Is that right?
And he was a good left-handed first baseman.
Yeah?
Yeah, he for fun.
Yeah.
And so I felt so bad about that he never got to see me.
He would have been proud of you.
He would have, yes.
Yeah. Well, now, how did you get discovered now? How do you just play every chance you got, it sounded like.
I'm in the Triple A League in Milwaukee.
Okay,
that's
good
amateur,
league.
Amateur.
Good league, though.
Yes,
right?
yeah. And I led the league in hitting that year. Mm-hmm. And some scout from out in the boonies was looking for ball players. I don't think he even saw me play, but he just looked at the batting average. And he offered me a contract for $150 a month.
Is that right? Yeah.
And boy, did I jump at it. I would have played for nothing.
You didn't get a chance to drill holes anymore.
No, I didn't have to. But at that time, I was working for the Paramount Picture Corporation. I had quit drilling holes. I was just about 20, yeah. And I had been working for Paramount Pictures down on 8th and Chambers, I guess it was.
Where the ballpark was.
No, not 8th and Chambers. 8th over near Wisconsin Avenue.
Oh, I know where you mean. I know exactly where you mean. It was on the corner there.
Yes,
that's right.
Paramount Motion, that's a distribution center.
Okay.
And it was my job to get the cans down off of the shelves that were being rented out to the different theaters.
Okay.
And also, the theaters at that time used to play on percentage. In other words, they paid $300 for a picture for 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And after the $300 where the tickets were sold at the window, the company, we and the theater owner split 50-50 on whatever tickets
on anything
were
over
sold.
300,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And it was also one of my jobs to see that nobody sold the same tickets over twice.
Uh-huh.
You know, the tickets were numbered.
Yeah.
And so that they didn't cheat on us.
Okay.
Say, oh no, we only sold $100 worth when they sold $200 or that sort of thing. So I had that job too. That was
okay. So you said
evenings, yeah.
Okay. So then they said, and you said something interesting. You said you would have played for nothing if you
I
had
would
to.
Have, oh, absolutely. All I would need was meals and a place to sleep. Oh, yeah, oh, yes.
Different game today.
Oh, and now they wouldn't play unless they get $1 million.
The autograph will cost you $120.
That's what I understand.
Yeah. Did you go to spring training then with the Tama?
Yes, yeah. So then I signed that $150 contract with the Tama and showed up for spring training, which was for 2 weeks in Ottumwa before the season started.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So we had 2 weeks of spring training, and there must have been 100 ball players there.
Is that right?
Yeah. So they just picked out the ones they wanted to keep.
Yeah.
And that's where I told them to go home. Yeah.
Now, how did it feel to be one of the people they kept? That had to...
Ooh, real good.
Yeah.
Real good. And I was able to stay in a hotel also.
In
spring training, they provided the meals and the lodging.
Okay.
But there also was a financial limit on the amount of the team's salary. In other words, it was something like... let's say $2,000 for, 15 or 18 ball players. Their total salary couldn't come up to more than maybe $2,000 or $3,000. So they had to be careful not to pay only their stars from the previous year $200 or $250 a month. Otherwise, they'd go over the salary. And then they'd be fined or whatever.
Okay.
Told to get rid of somebody or reduce their salary.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't know. Well, now, was that an agreement with a major league team, or that was just the agreement league?
See, they couldn't make enough money in the minors to support themselves if their salaries were too high.
Okay.
So the team, the agreement was like, and in the Mississippi Valley, there was Ottumwa, Cedar Rapids, Davenport, Rock Island, Moline, 8 teams like that, and they all had their meetings and agreed the salary limit was going to be $2,500.
Okay.
So
yeah,
there were 18 ball players, and they couldn't have more ball players than that because that would run their salary.
Yeah.
And also they had just 5 pitchers, and most of them had just 5 pitchers, and 9, 10, 11.
Just guys who were going to play.
Yeah.
Now, did you? What kind of coaching did you get when you arrived there?
Being a
baseball wife and a baseball family, it's a different kind of life too.
Oh, it is.
Than most people.
You
have. Yeah.
Sure. In the summertime, she and I could live high off the hog, you know. And in the wintertime, we ate fish and pork, which we caught.
Now, did you have to work during the summer or during the wintertime then?
No, we usually went to Florida.
We didn't. We used to stay in Florida. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But after baseball, after whatever the year you have there,
1940.
And I came back to Milwaukee. Came back to Milwaukee, and I had an uncle in Milwaukee who was a stomach specialist, and we came to visit him. And then while we were here, we heard about the Falk Corporation.
Oh.
That's a large gear manufacturing company. That's probably
my neighbor works there.
What's his name?
Gene Grundman.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, he's even younger than me. So
okay. But they said that they had a vice president who was crazy about baseball, and the company supported an industrial team.
Yeah, I saw seen that play.
So I thought I'd go down there and see if I could get a job while we were in Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
And they hired me right away. And it turned out that the fellow who was running their baseball team at Falk in the Industrial League was a teammate of mine who never played ball but was always the manager.
Oh, is that right?
And he was managing Falk.
Alfie
so turned. Yeah, I went in and said, and I told the employment agent that I would like to get a job there. He said, "Doing what?" And I said, "I don't know. I didn't care anything. I don't know anything about the business." But he says, "What have you been doing?" I said, "Oh, I've been playing baseball." Then it all came out. See.
Oh, okay.
And he left their office right away. Went right up to the vice president.
One, huh?
Yeah. And so they guess what kind of a job I got?
Not drilling holes.
No, but in the foundry, they gave me a job pouring heat in the foundry.
Ooh,
you know what that
right?
is?
Yeah.
That's a 30-ton ladle.
Yeah.
Held by an overhead crane, and you're on the handle.
That's different than playing ball, isn't it?
Yeah, you get sparks on your shoes.
Oh my! Were you guys kind of done with baseball then?
Yes.
I mean,
it was over there. It was the end of the line. And they told us that now is a good time to, while you're still able, to get in with some plant. And of course, the first year I worked there, we won the pennant in the Industrial League.
That was a good league, too.
Oh, you bet.
Yeah.
And then we went down into Texas and played, and I guess what we got one of the
Second
and third?
No, it was out in Kansas.
Where was it, honey?
Kansas.
Wichita used to have a big tournament there every year.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
right. That we
no,
were.
No, you were managing.
Yeah, I was managing. All the players kicked this other manager out.
Is that?
I felt pretty bad about it.
Because he was
that.
Your old friend.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. They didn't want to listen to him at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So recently, Charlie Sandhuber is his name. He was elected to the Hall of Fame in the Milwaukee Amateur Baseball.
Oh, is that right?
About 2 years ago, yeah.
Okay.
See, he spent his whole life managing ball clubs.
Yeah,
but he
for the fun of it.
He didn't go from Shinola or what baseball was the Hall of Fame. The umpire would call a strike in his team's favor, and if this other manager run out to complain, he'd come flying out too, even though it was in his favor. He didn't know enough to keep quiet.
Maybe that's part of the secret, one to keep quiet and one not to keep quiet.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah.
funny.
Yeah.
Well, now, when you, now, you met, okay, you guys were married by the time you went to Brooklyn.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Oh,
yes.
Yes, he played with Elmira.
Yeah, I played for Elmira, wasn't it? Rabbit
no,
Randall.
Elmira.
Yeah.
Rabbit.
Yeah. Incidentally, this is going to go in the Hall of Fame, this tape.
Yeah, it's going to Cooperstown, yeah. Cooperstown.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Basically, what happens is that I'm in a group called the Society for American Baseball Research. And there's kind of an oral history committee, and we're interviewing as many ball players in the area as possible. That's why I'm interviewing Ray Barry's, and it'll go to Cooperstown, and for people doing research, because I think your career, Elmer, was a lot more typical than than Ty Cobb and Babe Ruth.
Oh yeah,
some of
those
the
people. Average American boy who tried to play professional ball,
right?
Very definitely so.
Yeah, and so that's why they're interesting stories.
Yeah, that I would say, yes.
Now, did you end up moving to Brooklyn for that short time? Or?
Yeah. Oh, yes. We stayed at St. George Hotel.
I was there.
Which I don't think is there anymore. I think they just...
Oh, sure. Dorothy lived on Canal Street down in New Orleans.
Oh,
She's lived all over.
Too much.
Yes,
so you were kind of done with travel by that time, too, when packing up and moving, and by that time 40 came around?
We still liked it.
Dorothy loved it.
Really?
And the ball players' wives were always real friendly.
Yeah.
And you always had somebody to hold your hand or to show you around.
Yeah. Because it is a little, I mean, nobody can understand about being a ball player's wife except ball players' wives.
Right.
That's
think.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did have an article, I think it was in the Journal last summer, about the difficulties.
I think it did,
yeah.
I didn't quite agree.
I was
going to
say, I don't think Dorothy agreed with
it. I didn't quite agree with
it. I read that too, and I think I wouldn't agree with it entirely.
No.
Let me show this to Dorothy.
Yeah, I'm going to get a clean copy for you.
He's going to get a copy of this for me. This is the record.
You didn't know that you were...
The first time I ever saw that.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh. I was going through some of the players you played with, too. A lot of the names were not familiar to me, but really good, solid minor league folk. Now, one of the names I remember there is Duster Mayles.
Walter Mayles.
Yeah, he used to play with the Indians. And
oh, he had a terrible disposition.
Did he really?
Not personally. I mean, just on the ball field.
Oh, is that right? That's why they called him Duster, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dusty, yeah. Down you go.
Yeah.
And also Burley Grimes.
Yeah,
he was a spitball pitcher.
Yeah.
And he had a terrible disposition.
Did he really?
Oh, he'd get mad. He didn't pick on his players.
Yeah.
He'd just get mad, and he's fighting the umpires all the time. And finally, one of the umpires turned around to him, and he says, "Burley, if the bases were loaded and your mother comes to bat, she'd go down on her butt on the first pitch when she came up to bat."
Probably so. But it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was an awfully good pitcher.
Yeah.
Now, was he pitching anymore, or were you just managing?
No, he was just managing Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine.
Yeah, I'm going to get a copy of
that. Yeah, that's real nice.
Dorothy knew all of them. players and so forth.
Let me say some of the names. And another one who was
Walter Mills, yes.
Walter Mills, and the other guy who got a lot of notoriety was Art Shires.
Oh yes,
yeah. Art the Great.
Yeah.
Well,
you know this stuff as well as
oh, better. She's got a heck of a memory.
Yeah, I remember Art Shires.
Oh,
yeah, he was. I just went through my minor league book today, and just there was. In Terre Haute, in 1930, and again, some of these names aren't familiar to me. There's a guy named Bill Mizur, M-I-Z-E-U-R.
He played with Missouri.
He played with Springfield for.
Yeah.
And he had his major league career was two games with the Browns.
Oh, yeah.
And
Cecil Travis was one of our teammates.
Oh, yeah. He was a good one.
Yeah, I guess he wind up in the Hall of Fame one of these days.
Could be. He was a lifetime 300 there.
Yeah. When he was with us in Chattanooga when I was learning to catch.
Oh, was that right?
That was his first year in the in professional baseball.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And he and I were on the same team together. And the fellas were amazed because we think it was luck, and it was to some degree. Every time he hit a ground ball, it would always be between two and three. And of course, he had a heck of a batting average as a result of getting all those ground balls. But it just turned out that way.
Well, there is some luck to it, isn't it?
Oh,
I mean, you can have a lucky year and an unlucky. No, so he was with Washington
and
when you went.
The next year, the very next year, he was in Washington.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, is there, you've got to think, and I'm sure the wives get involved, maybe it's like being a musician, so why do some people make it? And that when you know you've got as much talent as some of those people, it's still got to wonder how come some of them made it.
Some stay and some don't.
Yeah. Well, the other guy that I wrote that was in the league at that time, Reb Russell, used to pitch with the White Sox years and years ago.
I wasn't exposed to him very much.
Well, it was his last year. He was playing first base with Quincy for a couple of games. Again, I don't know these names too well, but a guy named Dutch Dorman.
Yeah, Dutch Dorman, yes. Did you remember that one?
I remember the name.
I forget the name.
He was with York.
It was a minor league team.
These are all, Walter French was with Little Rock.
Oh, Walter French, yeah.
He
was quite a ball player.
Played pro football for a couple years, too.
He was at Little Rock, and that's right. He was a pro football player. He was good. I think he was a center fielder.
Yeah, I think he was an outfielder, A guy named Irv Jeffries.
Yeah, that's a little bit.
Wes Kingdom.
Kingdom,
yeah.
He was a good shortstop. Yeah.
Yeah, that was in 32, little guy, so according
small, to yeah, small, but a good shortstop. And he played a lot of minor league ball, but in the upper level, International League, the Pacific Coast League, and so forth. Yeah.
Well, apparently he had. It was interesting. He had He was hitting .324 with the Senators, and they sent him down. He never. That was his only time he was doing it.
Well, you see.
I wonder what the story was.
Well, Joe Cronin was a shortstop, and he was the manager.
And he was also the owner's son-in-law.
Well, he got to be the owner's son-in-law.
Yeah,
when we were there, he was still. When I was there,
with
Cronin was still a single boy.
Okay.
And the manager, the owner's, Clark Griffith's niece, I think it was, daughter, had her eye on Cronin. But we all knew it on the ball.
Was he a good guy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Good ball player.
Yeah. Heck of a good ball player.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Guy named Lefty Mailho.
Mails? Walter Mails.
No, this is a guy named M-A-I-L-H-O. He was in Atlanta in 39.
I can't remember that.
Who else we got here? Red McBride.
Yeah, I used to hear that name.
Frank McGowan.
Yeah, that's another one.
Pete Monahan? No, he was in Chattanooga in Atlanta in 33. Yeah. Now, maybe he was gone to, he traded him during the year.
I was going to say, I don't remember him at Chattanooga.
Okay, the guy named Andy Reese was with in Memphis in 32.
See, those were all in the Southern League, yeah.
Now, here's a guy you play with, Ray Prim.
Yeah, pitcher.
Yeah, in 30. Now, he ended up with the Cubs.
Yeah, he didn't have much on the ball.
He had a bad year when he played with you.
Yeah, I was going to say, mm-hmm. but he had good control, you know, and he was just kind of thinking his way through.
What's the, and this is always a standard question. What's the biggest memory you guys had, or the single biggest thrill or whatever it was?
Well, I can't answer that question because there were so many.
Is that right?
And so many of them were so similar that it just became bundled up and just disregarded.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't think too much about any one thing anyway, as I saw it, because you'd have it on your mind, and that wasn't good. I mean, if you went up to hit against a certain pitcher and you were afraid he might throw you this or throw you that, that was against your item.
So you had to go up, and just that each one was a new at bat.
Take it as it comes.
Yeah.
Don't look for something which you're not going to get, or don't. If you don't get, you're going to look terrible.
Okay. Yeah. So now, so some batters, I would guess, think too much.
Yes. They call it guessing. In other words, if you, certain things are pretty well defined. If you're up there hitting, and the pitcher throws you three balls and no strikes, if the bases are loaded, well, you assume he's going to throw you a fastball on the next pitch, right? Three balls,
sure,
no strikes.
He
wants to get the strike. If there's men in scoring position, I should put it that way, he may not throw you a fastball on that fourth ball, you know, for a strike, because he assumes that you got the hit sign from the manager with their men in scoring position, and if he lays one in there for you, you know it's coming. So he's going to try to fool you, and he'll throw you a curveball.
Okay.
Now, if there's nobody on base, he'll throw you two more fastballs.
Yeah.
Because
your
manager's already signaled to you, you take the next two pitches and look for a base on balls. And then if you don't get ball four, then you're on your own on the last one.
Okay.
Take it or leave it. I started in 19.
Wouldn't you be more comfortable here?
No.
Okay.
And and the first year I was playing in the Mississippi Valley League with Ottumwa, Iowa, and I hit 397, and I had hit until the last week. I was hitting over 400.
Is that right?
And they sold me for $3,000, which was a lot of money in those days. And so I got to thinking, when I ever get released, I will ask, when I sign up to get my release at the end of each season, and see if I can get there for a better salary that way.
Okay.
And that's why.
That was before agents.
Yeah, that's why I did what I did. I played in quite a few teams. I went to Hollywood, and when I got to Hollywood, Bill Dickey's brother,
Skeets Dickey,
was sent down from the Yankees or wherever he was, and he replaced me.
Oh, is that right?
I was automatically out, even though they paid $3,000 to get me. When Dickey's name arrived on the scene,
he
got the job.
He was box office.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
And so from then on, I got to be kind of independent in regard to signing, but I
So you're almost a freelancer in a way.
Almost, yeah. But if it was a nice town and if I had a good year, I would usually sign up again right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I said, that was not the conventional way to do things.
No, it wasn't, no. But I had run across a few Sharpies that were on the way down.
Yeah.
And they told me how to operate.
Oh, okay. Well, now, you were born in St. Louis.
Yes.
Okay, now, did you grow up there, too?
I stayed in St. Louis until I was 12 years old, and then my father was transferred. He was a manufacturer of shoe lasts.
Okay,
you know,
is that the top part?
Yeah. The shoe was built around.
Okay.
And he was transferred to Milwaukee, and I had to go along, you know, I was 12 years old. So I started to go to school here after leaving St. Louis.
Okay, where did you go to school here?
Oh,
in Milwaukee.
Yeah. I started off at the 37th Street School. That's about 37th Street near Walnut.
Okay.
And then after I graduated, that's grammar school. And after I graduated from grammar school, I went to Washington High School.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. It was a real nice school.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure how
long
it
time
now.
Ago, yeah.
It was brand new, beautiful school.
It's still a not a bad-looking school.
Oh, it's
now,
a good-looking school.
Yeah.
It was always a beautiful building.
Yeah.
And boy, everything in that school was immaculate.
Now with the South Division.
Now, then when I got to be, my folks didn't have much money, and I was told early in life, my mother died when I was 3 years old, and I was told by my stepmother early in life that as I got old enough, 16, I was going to have to go to work and help support the
family.
Oh,
really? Yeah.
So I quit Washington High School when I had 2 years in.
That wasn't unusual then, was it?
No.
Yeah.
That was, and I went to the Boys Technical High School, where I learned the electrical trade so that I could work as an electrician.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So was that what you were going to be? You were going to be an electrician?
I thought that would be... electricity was modern.
Yeah.
And I thought that would be the coming thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I never amounted to Hillaby as an electrician. Because my idea of an electrician was to do electrical things, not to... You know what I was a house wire. I was there with a brace and bit,
drilling
holes through 2x4s to run the cables through. I thought, this is not electrical work.
Yeah, I could have done that.
Yeah, anybody can drill a hole. And then that's all it amounted to. You see, every one of these outlets has a flexible cable coming through. And every one of those cables is running along through a lot of 2x4s and 2x6s.
That's what you were in charge of.
Yeah, I was in charge.
Drilling holes.
Yeah.
Now, when did you start playing ball?
1927.
How about when you were a kid, though? You probably played
ball. Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yes, I was playing ball as soon as I could run and throw. And
is that right?
Bat, yeah, and I loved the bat. And I was a little bit arrogant, I think. I'm pretty sure I was. Because I always, when it was kind of time to have batting practice, I was the first one in line.
Well, Ray said you were one of the best hitters he's ever seen.
Yeah, I was pretty good.
Yeah.
I led a lot of leagues in the minor leagues.
Yeah, I know you. Yeah.
But I never got a fair, I thought, a fair shot in the major leagues because it was, when I would get there in spring training, I was fine. But just as soon as the season would start, these double-A players would be coming up to the major league.
Yeah.
And yours truly was going back to some other team.
That was had to be disappointing.
Oh, it was.
Yeah. Because that's why you play.
Yeah. And did I ever tell you how I got to be a catcher?
No.
Okay. I started out as... all kids play the outfield, and then they said, well, you got a good arm, you can play on third base. So I played third base for about 5 years in the minor leagues until we got to Chattanooga and we won the Southern League pennant at Chattanooga, And after the season, and the following season, we were playing, our first string catcher got hurt. He hurt his hands, and mm-hmm. they had to take him out, and they put in this utility catcher, the second string yeah. catcher. And I always like to warm up the pitcher, just to have something mm-hmm. to do before the game. Mm-hmm. So I was always warming up the pitchers, and the second string catcher got hurt about the third day he was in there, and the manager looked at me clumpy, says, "You're in there." So Klump was in there all right. I never caught behind the bat.
Oh, was that wrong?
Never did. Only wow. just warm up, you know.
Yeah.
And Luke Sewell is the one that, who taught me how to catch.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, he's
said,
a good one.
Oh, and yeah. He said, "Albert, you've got to gather everything." And I see today with these one-hand mitts.
Yeah.
Is the catch low balls you're supposed to catch this way.
Yeah. And above the yeah.
And gather everything. He said, "Albert, that's what makes a good catcher. And also, you'll get along real well with the pitchers if you throw every bone back to the pitcher right here."
Oh, it's no kidding.
You probably never noticed
no.
that. No, uh-uh. Yeah, the pitchers will love it.
Yeah.
Because I said, yes, I've seen it. We're diving around yeah. on and on. In those days, you were supposed to conserve your energy, you know, the pitcher was.
Yeah.
And everybody else. Today, the batter walks halfway back to the bench after every pitch.
That's right, yeah.
The pitcher walks completely around the mound and then decides eventually to look for the sign and then throw. And he said, in those days when we were starting, the pitcher made as little effort as possible after every pitch. So the pitcher would stand on the mound mm-hmm. and throw. And they finished up like this, not like
feel.
This, so
yeah.
they get hit in the butt.
Yeah, or falling down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said, "Throw everyone here," and the pitchers just loved it, because otherwise they're doing this.
Sure.
And they're doing that, and it takes a little energy.
No, that's interesting, yeah.
yeah.
Of course, in those days, we expected a pitcher to finish
nine
the game.
Nine innings, so,
yeah.
yes. Now, he goes in there for one hit once in a while.
That's right, yeah. It's a totally different game.
Yes, it is.
Do you still watch baseball, or
I get disgusted.
So does Ray.